The Jets load up and sign Tyron Smith and add a little bit of extra firepower to their receiving room by signing Mike Williams. Caleb Williams just getting done with his pro day with the Chicago Bears and some player reaction from the Bears themselves. On top of that, we also have our free agency overreactions. You're listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns. Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Good afternoon and happy Friday from here at from the Fumble Rooski Podcast. Chris Kostich, CJ Medeiros, we got a good one for you, and we appreciate everyone for tuning in, especially during this wild time of March Madness going on. So everyone's probably in the mindset of college basketball right now, but there's still some football going on as well. Still some football-related news that we can talk about. The Jets signing Tyron Smith and Mike Williams. We'll start out with that. The Jets O-line has been pretty iffy, and you know, we can definitely say that for when Zach Wilson was there, Aaron Rodgers tearing his Achilles on the O-line, basically selling. And Mike Williams getting a one-year deal with the Jets to kind of revamp their receiving core as well. So he's going to be joining Garrett Wilson and quite a good pickup, to say the least, talent-wise. But CJ, what are your thoughts about what we got on right here?
The Jets, they're just kind of a weird team to look at because on the surface, I like the signing of Tyron Smith and I like the signing of Mike Williams. However, Williams has injury problems and Smith is old. And as a result, you know, they're both on one-year deals. And that is why this is such a head-scratcher to me, because these kind of seem like win now moves. You know, like where if the Jets were like one or two pieces away from the Super Bowl, I would say, oh yeah, you know, this makes sense. You know, you're making that push. But are they really? I mean, even when Aaron Rodgers comes back, I mean, I'm not really afraid of them.
I mean, that's if he even comes back.
Yeah, that's if, because you know, he may or may not be RFK Jr.'s vice president, which is a Patriots fan, please let it happen. But you know. It is what it is. But, I mean, so let's just say he does come back and rejects the allure of the White House. But, you know, he does all that. That's fine. But either way, I mean, Breece Hall, like, on paper, that's fine. You know, Mike Williams and Garrett Wilson, Tyron Smith on the O-line. But it's not built to last, you know, because a lot of these guys are just, you know, on one-year deals. And the defense, I mean, you obviously have Sauce, you have the Williams brothers. Like, okay. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it is, because on paper, they should be fine, but I don't know what it is. They're missing it. I mean, maybe it's like a true, like elite receiver. I'm not saying Garrett Wilson can't be that, but all I'm saying is all the chatter of him being a top 10 receiver, I think have pretty much died. Yeah. I mean, Breece Hall is good, but, you know, he's got some injury concerns. So if the Jets were closer to contention overall, I would say these are great moves. I mean, they are still great moves, but the one-year deal thing kind of makes me raise an eyebrow, you know?
Yeah, especially with it only being 1 year. And that's the weird thing with Mike Williams, right? He gets cut, and he's a very talented receiver, which we've highlighted, but the big thing is his injury issues. He missed what was it, like 75% of the season this past season because of a season-ending injury. And like I said, Tyron Smith is kind of on the older side, so Lord knows how much he has left in the tank for that. It is very, very risky moves, to say the least. And it kind of goes back to what you were just saying, that win now type of mentality, but are they really in a position to be in a win now spot? And you don't know how Aaron Rodgers is going to recover from that Achilles injury. You know, you got a 40-year-old that tore his Achilles, and not many quarterbacks, besides Brady and kind of Brett Favre have been able to play at somewhat of a high level past 40. Rodgers just is about to turn 40, if he hasn't already. And it just seems very risky for the position that they're in, especially with the fact that they might not even have Rodgers at the beginning of the season. There's a lot of drama that's just around the Jets organization to begin with. So the win, having it be win now, just seems like a stupid move for them to do, to say the least.
Yeah, you know, I do agree. But it's like, it's a Jets move, you know what I mean?
Oh, it's 100% a Jets move. 100%.
You know, it's like, they will say, oh yeah, you know, we're totally win now. But like I said, it's like, I mean, the AFC East just doesn't wow me as a whole. I mean, someone has to, but as good as their defense is, can they dance with Mahomes? Can they shut down a guy like Lamar Jackson? Heck, I mean, even in Buffalo, you got a Josh Allen who can still just torch any team, you know, regardless of how open their Super Bowl window may or may not be.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is that it's a huge Jets move in the fact that this year and last year, they have completely gone all in based off of Aaron Rodgers. Last year, they get Rodgers, and they bring in all of his buddies who proceed to do absolutely diddly squat last year without Rodgers. And the only bright spot, really, with this Jets team was the defense and Zach Wilson for like 3 weeks. Other than that, this Jets team isn't even close to being in a win now spot to be making these types of moves. And they haven't made any break your balls type of moves to even consider themselves to be a contender to begin with.
Yeah. I mean, the last kind of move they had like that was getting Aaron Rodgers. And that one didn't age quite so well. I mean, just going back, I mean, if you yourself are curious, you can always go back to the Fumble Risky podcast page and look at all our free agency updates. And you can just go and scroll through, obviously, but it's just they haven't really done a whole lot.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. I mean, obviously, you know, you have Tyron Smith and Mike Williams, but who else? I mean, I think they signed Tyrod Taylor as a backup, you know, given Zach Wilson, interesting as he is, the ability to seek a trade. I mean, that's the only one that really, like, really, like, jumps at me. And I think they may have re-signed their kicker, Zerline.
Yeah, they re-signed Zerline, I'm pretty sure.
But yeah, but what have they done?
Nothing.
I guess is the question to just justify making themselves contenders. Oh, wait, hold on. They did sign 49ers defensive tackle Javon Kinlaw to a one-year deal.
That's one of those just one-year prove-it deals, though. That's the thing. Like, you're expecting to make a run this year, but the reality is you're probably not.
Yeah, I'm very confused because you really think Tyron Smith is the answer? I mean, the Cowboys fans would like to have him back in Dallas, but they can also tell you he's like 33. And I don't know how much longer he has left. And Mike Williams, you know, he's pushing 30. And, you know, it's not like he has an injury history or anything. So the reason it doesn't make sense is because not only are you not in contention, but afterward, you're going to be back to square one.
Exactly. And especially because Lord knows if Rodgers is how long Rodgers even has left in the tank. They've bet the next 3 to 4 years around Rodgers in terms of how the team is structured, even draft picks too. Like if Rodgers were to leave tomorrow and say, I'm either retired or I'm running for vice president or whatever the hell Aaron Rodgers wants to do, he has basically put the Jets organization in this huge chokehold in terms of draft picks, this and that, salary cap. It's a bad situation that the Jets have put themselves in for probably nothing. That's the big thing. It's probably going to end up nowhere.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When Aaron Rodgers was traded, at the time, we said, oh, it's a very big swing. And I said outright, anything less than a Super Bowl victory, I'm calling this a failure. Aaron Rodgers could get his whatever number, you know, MVP, right? He could go out and set records. But so long as that ring eludes him, I'm calling it a failure. And it sucks because it's not really the Jets' fault. I mean, what was it, like five snaps before his Achilles just went the way of, Schottenheimer over there with the Chargers. You know what I mean? Like, just to make a comparison, because it was like a season and a half. That's how it was. And like I said, you can't control that and you can't blame them. But my point is, that happens and it blew up in your face. And it seems like they're just trying to plug holes in a sinking ship.
Yeah.
Because their Super Bowl window, as we all know, slammed shut when he got hurt. And I feel like they're desperately trying to wrench it open, but I'm just not seeing it.
That's the thing. It's not there. There's nothing too open. So I just don't know why the Jets would try to get, because they weren't when. Right before Rodgers got there to begin with, they weren't in any sort of win now scenario. And then the moves that they made to put these players around Rodgers was kind of just a head scratcher, as you really think that these guys are going to be what's going to get you to the promised land. I mean, no disrespect to Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb.
Randall Cobb a free agent though?
I
was going to say, I thought he was. Then again, not that he would do anything. And by the way, about old Alan Lazard there, let's just really think about that. I mean, when you say no disrespect to Alan Lazard, I disagree. I mean, you know the contract they gave him, right?
It doesn't come to mind, but it was definitely lucrative. It was like, what, 3 years, 40 mil?
4 years, $44 million with the New York Jets, according to SpotTrack, with a $10.9 million signing bonus. And if we go back to his stats last year, he has 23 catches, 311 yards, and one touchdown.
Big disrespect to Alan Lazard.
Yeah. And Cobb, you know, was also just signed to appease Rodgers, and that didn't work. Turns out just trying to steal the ingredients from Green Bay's kitchen doesn't mean you have the wherewithal to perfect the recipe.
And this isn't to say that if Rodgers or when Rodgers comes back, that this team will definitely be better with Rodgers on the field. And he's definitely going to have his way with the fact that he's going to have Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams. And Lazard's going to could be a solid number three with Rodgers at the helm now. So there's that. So you could definitely bank on the offense being a little bit better, especially with Breece Hall in the backfield and whatnot. But is the O-line going to hold up? Is Mike Williams even going to stay healthy enough for that to even matter? That you have two really good top two receivers at that point. I mean, Rodgers in his own right can do fine with middling receivers like Lazard and Cobb at this point, but is it going to even be sustainable enough? That's the big issue.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be generous and give him two seasons. You know, that's probably like as much as you've lengthened this.
Which is less than what the Jets are planning for.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe you can extend these guys like another year at the end of this season, but that's just I don't understand it. I mean, like I said, the Smith and Williams aren't bad. They're actually really not.
Yeah.
But like I said, and I will end on this seems more like these are like final piece type of guys, you know? It's like you just need one piece to get you over the hump, and this is it. But the Jets, they're not even close to over the hump. I wouldn't even say they're halfway up one side of the hill.
No, definitely not. I think that's a good place to close on right there. We'll move on. We'll take a short little break. When we come back, we'll talk about Caleb Williams' pro day with the Bears and some of the Chicago players' reactions. You're listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns. Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. Chris Kostic, CJ Medeiros. We move on to our next topic, the Bears holding their pro day, or Caleb Williams holding his pro day with Chicago. And Keenan Allen was in attendance, Jalen Johnson, DJ Moore as well. It was funny. The video of Caleb Williams first walking onto the field in general and just acting like he's not even seeing Keenan Williams, literally like 5 feet away from him. I thought that was kind of comical in itself, but the big story really is the comments made by Jalen Johnson. And this is a very true statement that he makes here, that whoop-de-doo, you're going to get Caleb Williams, but it's not going to matter unless he actually performs up to his expectations. And I think that just sums it up right there. Congrats. Yeah. You got the number 1 pick. You're going to get Caleb Williams. And you're going to put him on an incredible team, and he's going to be set up as, in terms of situations that a number 1 pick is going to get into, he's going to walk into a team that was able to finish, 6-11, 7-10, one of the two, I forget. But they made a big push at the end of the year, regardless if they were going to make playoffs or not. They still made a pretty decent push to at least put themselves in a potential conversation. They finished 7-10. They add in Keenan Allen, along with a bunch of other weapons on both sides of the ball. And on top of that, the moves that they made in the middle of the season last year, Caleb Williams is going to be put in a fantastic scenario. We've talked about this before. The Bears' success is going to ride on the shoulders of Caleb Williams.
I
thought you needed an extra minute.
No. Sorry. So I'll give you a second. No. It's fine. So the Bears. This, looking back as far as first overall pick quarterbacks go, might be one of the best scenarios we've ever seen for a quarterback, like I said, that gets drafted in the first round. This is like one of the best situations. I mean, you've got a decent running back room. We got DeAndre Swift, and you got Khalil Herbert. You have Keenan Allen and DJ Moore to throw to. Cole Kmet is a tight end. An offensive line, which should hold up, provided you don't hold the ball for 3 seconds of play. And there's really no excuses for him not to pan out. I mean, unless Matt Eberflus really is that bad of a coach, and you all who may have listened to the podcast for a bit know that I'm technically not a fan. But I like what Jalen Johnson said. And people are saying, oh, no, he's just a Fields fan. He's perhaps being mean to him. But no, I think he's correct. Where he did, He did make a point. I think he was on Kay Adams' podcast, and she said point blank, how are you going to handle a Hollywood player coming into the locker room? Because that's what he is. He's a Hollywood player. And what he said was interesting. Quote, there's this whole element of his success. There's like weird stuff, a Hollywood-y sort of stuff that's going on. Guys like you in that locker room, you're going to set the tone a little bit. Sounds like for whatever quarterback comes in there. That's basically what Kay Adams said. Sorry. Right. And this is what Johnson said. He said, and I quote, you just humble yourself. You can't bring that Hollywood stuff into the building, especially now with guys who play this game at a high level for consecutive years in the league. like myself, guys like Tremaine, TJ, meaning Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards, Keenan Allen, I feel like we're going to see through it. And it's like, no, what you did in college, the Hollywood, you got to prove yourself. That stuff doesn't matter. And once again, he is correct. Because Caleb Williams, at least in college, plays like a shorter Patrick Mahomes. You know, like the no-look passes, the dazzling arm. And it was impressive how he didn't really have any elite players to work with. I mean, really stop and think, all right? If you look at the draft, how many other USC guys are going in the first round? Well, let me tell you, I've done enough mock drafts to tell you probably not one. Unless somebody does like a really weird reach. And it's just some of Caleb Williams' actions have been very concerning, to say the least.
Yeah, the off the field stuff is very weird.
Yeah, very weird. And they're saying stuff like, oh, it's just because he loves the game. He cries because he's competitive and he, you know, it's a tough loss. I'm like, no, that's not tears of frustration. That those are tears of petulance. And I think anyone can see that. But that's just my thought, at least on what Jalen Johnson said. I think Jalen Johnson's right.
Yeah, I think I would be surprised if I found someone that said Jalen Johnson is out of place or out of line to be making those comments. And if you're saying that, then you're just a freaking idiot and you don't know anything about coming on to a new team, because that's everywhere. You come up from high school to anywhere from D3 to NAIA, you go anywhere after being a big fish in a small pond, you are going to be looked on to prove yourself. Once you go to this bigger pond, you're nobody until you actually do something about it and show your worth. Prove your worth. And yeah, Caleb Williams was a big dog in a small pond out in USC. And yeah, you could even say that was a pretty big pond considering that, you know, it is Hollywood. It's USC. There's a lot of star-studded things that go on over at USC, and there's a lot of history regarding that. You know, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Carson Palmer, Mark Sanchez. Trying to think of another guy that was on
Sam Darnold. Teams.
What?
Sam Darnold,
yeah. And a lot of those quarterbacks, some of those players over at USC never really panned out either. Matt Leinart didn't pan out. Carson Palmer had a pretty decent career, battled a lot of injuries, but he had a pretty damn decent career. Mark Sanchez, 3 good years out of the league. Sam Darnold, middling backup now, or well, not anymore, was a middling backup, and now he's probably going to be starting over in Minnesota. There's a lot to prove for Caleb Williams, and there's a lot of stats that go against Caleb Williams as well to show that he still has a lot to prove. You know, this is the type of quarterback that was beating up on not as great teams, and the stats show that once he faced a pretty damn decent team, or at least a top 25 team, his stats were not as good. And now you could say that could also be attributed to what you had just mentioned, that USC doesn't really have a lot of guys that are probably going to go first round or anything like that. But it's college football. Anything can happen. Look at Colorado. Colorado, for some reason, was ranked for a week or two, which is insane in itself. So anything can happen. Upsets happen all the time. You never know with college sports in general, but with those stats in mind and all this off the field stuff that's going on, it's Caleb Williams is under an umbrella of pressure, to say the least, and he's going to have to find a way to overcome all that pressure.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. And it's just one of the big weaknesses that people seem to just be now talking about Williams is like, it's not his size. I mean, everyone's like, oh, he's 6'1", scary. But I'm able to overlook that for a bit because it's just a lot of the off the field stuff. I mean, you've seen how his camp has been behaving, right?
It's weird. Like, it's how very weird.
stirring up rumors that he might sit out or something if he goes somewhere he doesn't like. And I'm sure you know how his father's been acting too. How about his dad, like, allegedly may or may not want a minority stake in whatever team he goes to?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Now, obviously, this isn't him doing it, but they always say you got to be careful about the company you keep. And, well, that, basically. And DJ Moore even chimed in and said, if we get him, I hope he comes in ready to work.
Because that's the other thing. That's the other thing with the Chicago players, too. It's not like they wanted Justin Fields to leave. They saw Justin Fields as a really good leader, despite
especially
his on, like, no matter what his on the field play was, like, obviously Justin Fields did not have a great 3 years in Chicago. No matter the on the field play, he was still a leader. And that's what those guys in Chicago really respected out of Justin Fields. And they even wanted Justin Fields to stay. But that's business at the end of the day. You can't always get what you want. So now you got another guy that's coming in to replace him in a much better situation than what your previous guy was in. So these Chicago players are probably going to even have really high, they're probably going to have much higher expectations than what they had for Justin Fields.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I would think so, because Fields at the time, you know, being drafted was considered great. And I mean, truthfully, this isn't age well, so don't mock me, but in the 2021 draft, I had him as my second best quarterback.
I think a lot of people would have agreed with you on that.
Yep. I mean, if I recall correctly, like at the time, I mean, just for a side note, I obviously had Williams one, but I had Fields too. And I still think Fields can be good. And I think a lot of these players know that as well. I mean, granted, I'm not the biggest Fields fan anymore, but I still believe he does carry that potential. And like I said, it's like the players saw it, and DJ Moore was outspoken that he wanted Fields to stay. But he, like you said, understands that business is business, and he knows that the Bears really want to win. But can you imagine, though, with the Bears, you finally patch up most of the holes in your roster, you ship off Fields, right? Can you just imagine if the Bears draft Williams and Williams turns out to be a massive flop? I mean, I'm not even talking about good, not great, just like flames out completely a la Jamarcus Russell or Ryan Leaf. Then you have egg on your face, and that is the type of thing that will cost somebody like Eberflus's job.
Yeah. And that was the other thing, too. The last two quarterbacks for Chicago have been at the expense of, you had Justin Fields come in, his head coach gets fired, now he has to go to another head coach that doesn't really want him. And it was the same thing with Trubisky as well. Comes in, gets drafted head coach gets fired. Now you got another coach that doesn't really want you. Now you got to live with that. Then it's the same thing with Justin Fields. He gets drafted by one coach that wants him. He gets fired. Now Eberflus comes in. He's the guy that doesn't really want Justin Fields. And say the same thing happens for Caleb Williams. It's just this, it's this revolving door of, this weird revolving door of this trend that keeps on happening. And who knows, maybe third time's the charm and Caleb Williams ends up being that guy. But with how the way things have been for the Bears in the last 5 years, I don't know. It's tough to really say. I hope that Caleb Williams is good. I don't prey on the downfall very often of many people in general. But, you know, if it means that we have a historic franchise be back to being a top 10 team, by all means. I think that Chicago being a top 15, top 10 team could be really good for the league. I don't know.
Yeah.
You have any more thoughts about that?
No, that's pretty much it. You hit the nail right on the head.
Word. So we'll move on. When we come back, we'll go over our free agency overreactions, see which team made some moves that might garner a lot of overreactions to how they perform for next season. You're listening to the Fumble Rooski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns. Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You're listening to the Fumble Rooski podcast presented by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. I want to apologize to those guys for this being the first time that I even mentioned them to begin with. Chris Kostich, CJ Medeiros, we move on to our next topic, free agency overreactions. So we'll probably just throw out a couple teams that made a lot of big moves from this past offseason or from the last couple weeks that might up their stock for next year, might not. It's kind of wishy-washy with a lot of these teams, because it does seem like a lot of these teams have gotten better, but have they really gotten better? That's the thing. So, CJ, I'll let you kind of throw out a couple teams, and we can kind of discuss on that.
All right. So here's a team that I would really like to overreact towards. The Buffalo Bills. Well, I just look at what happened. Look at who you lost. Damian Harris is still a free agent. I don't think he's coming back. Gabe Davis now ditched the cold of Buffalo to the warm of Jacksonville. Mitch Morse also, I believe, went to Jacksonville. Did he not? And on top of that, the best safety tandem in the league is no more, and you are short Tre'Davious White. And what did they do in free agency? Well, they're in the fiery depths of cap hell, so not a whole lot. I mean, let's be honest. Like, when you look at, like, some of their most notable signings, I mean, they extended Teron Johnson, made him, I believe, like, the highest-paid nickel corner in the league. Like, all right. Yep. Sure, he'll replace Tre'Davious White. You gave Curtis Samuel, ready for this? 3 years, $30 million. Wow, Curtis Samuel, the career number 3/number 2. You gave him $30 million. And honestly, all cards on the table here, I fully expect them to go receiver in the draft. So that contract might age like milk from 600 BC. And even beyond that, just a whole lot of nothing. Which is weird because Buffalo, or at least their fans, fancy themselves contenders. And that's something that I, by the way, have heard quite a bit. They go out and they say, oh, yo, we're ready to contend. We'll take on Mahomes this time. No, you won't. You've gotten so much worse. And I'm not saying the Super Bowl window's closed, not by a long shot, but it definitely jumped down by about halfway.
Yeah, it definitely did. I didn't think that their Super Bowl window was going to be open for much longer anyways. Beginning of last year, I didn't really think – I thought that this was probably going to be their last year to really do something. And middle of the season last year as well, we all said that they're done. They don't have much else really to their name. And that was when they had just gone 6-6, and then they rattled off 5 wins to get the division. Congrats. Like, yeah, you got the division, but you're still not good enough to beat Mahomes and the Chiefs. It's their window was closing ever since that, ever since the wild final two minutes of that overtime game in Kansas City, where the Chiefs ended up winning the 13 seconds game. Their window was closing very quickly after that game, and they didn't do enough to really do anything about it. You know, you signed Von Miller, and because you signed Von Miller, you now have Von Miller's a great defensive end, but then you brought him in, and now he's on domestic violence charges, and he gets hurt. Congrats. and now you're paying him a ton of money, and now you got to get rid of a bunch of household names that you homegrown names, never mind household names, homegrown names that have been with the system for the last 6-7 years. And now you got to get rid of them because you're paying Von Miller too much money.
Yeah. And I would like to take my point, right? And I'm going to bring it a step further. I think when it comes to overreactions, we can overreact to the entire AFC East. So we already have spoken about Buffalo just now, and we've already attacked the Jets a wee bit. And if you've watched this podcast at all this free agency, you know we've pretty much put New England through the ringer.
Patriots aren't doing anything.
But I think Miami has gotten away for a little too long, and let's rectify that. Well, you lost your starting right guard. What's his name? Hunt? Yes, Hunt. That's him. You lost edge rusher Andrew Van Ginkle as well, I believe.
Yep.
And, you know, just defensive tackle Christian Wilkins. You know, not like he was huge. And your other defensive tackle, Raekwon Davis as well. Yeah, that's it, Robert Hunt. You lost him to Carolina. You lost, like I said, both your defensive tackles, and you lost Van Ginkle.
And Xavien Howard.
Oh, right, and Xavien Howard, who they cut.
Yep.
And this is why the Miami Dolphins are just a very frustrating team. Because, I mean, they signed center Aaron Brewer and tight end Hunter Henry among some of their more notable additions. You know, he extended Teron Armstead, but I before have described the Miami Dolphins as, and I quote, as a team that is all flash, no substance, all sizzle, no steak. That's the thing. They're not in contention. They'll stuff the stat sheet. They'll dazzle you. But whenever they're on a team where they're evenly matched with, Mike McDaniel gets outcoached. That's yep. How it is. Like when you take away McDaniel's gimmicks, he becomes at best average. Once his tricks are gone and he's forced to play nose to the grindstone tough football like in Kansas City, we saw what happened. And you're only getting worse. And I mean, you need to beef up that O-line fast because we don't need Tua Tagovailoa spazzing out on the ground again. And your running game is okay. I mean, you have A-Chain, but it's fast. But I don't know. I mean, he's all right. I mean, Hill and Waddle, fine. Armstead, fine. I mean, like, your interior line's a little wonky. But it's your defense. Awesome. You're going to drop 40 points a game. Well, your defense outside of Jalen Ramsey and Javon Holland ain't looking too good. Oh, you also lost Jerome Baker as well. And Emmanuel Ogba. So that's great. Your offense can fire off points, and your defense will probably give those up. So Miami is just, like I said, they need to go out and make moves, and they just
haven't. Yeah.
They're so annoying. They're a social media team and nothing more.
Their biggest moves was basically re-signing Braxton Berrios and signing Shaq Barrett to a one-year deal. And if you really want to say Jonnu Smith getting him on a two-year deal, then sure. But they haven't really made a ton of moves to really consider them to be in the same spot that they are that they were in last year. And it's going to come back to the same thing. If they don't have a home playoff game or have home field advantage, they're not going to do anything. And I said that at the beginning of the season last year. I'm going to say it till the day I die. If you're a team that plays in a warm weather climate, you better keep in that warm weather climate, because more times than not, you're going to get your ass handed to you in 20 degree weather.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because Miami, I think, is too used to playing in Miami. I know that's not something they can control, but the way they play in poor weather is bad just from like a scheming perspective. It's like you can't really air out the ball too much in the cold.
Yeah.
And to be fair, and you know what Miami does, right, in their stadium, the way it's built, it
falls
sunlight on the opposing team to the point where there's like a 20 degree heat difference, and they force their opponents to wear their home jerseys because darker colors absorb heat.
Yep.
And they'll just say, oh, if you don't like it, do something about it. And then, you know, they'll go, they'll play in the cold, and then they will start screaming about how it's not fair. Because at the end of the day, Miami, they're flashy, but they're not tough, if that makes sense.
No, I completely understand. Tough
team, physically or mentally. And they only got weaker. Then, of course, there's New England. We already know New England's not doing well enough. So we're just going to, like, leave that there. Because we don't need to talk about them, because we spent, like, the last two episodes saying, what the hell have they been doing? And are there any other teams that come to your mind, you know, when we talk about teams that have done enough versus haven't? Because there's one that I can think of.
Well, one team that comes to mind, I mean, this was, in theory, this should be a kind of a big signing, but Chase Young to the Saints, especially with the Saints being in cap hell, they were able to get him on a one-year deal. But now there's complications around Chase Young and his physical now, too. So that's one that comes to mind immediately. I feel like the Bears, you could throw them in just because you don't even know how Caleb Williams is going to play. Justin Fields to the Steelers, because he's probably not even going to start, or maybe he will, because now there's reports saying that Russell, depending on how Russell Wilson does in training camp in the preseason, he could be gone by August, which would be kind of insane.
Yeah,
that's all that really comes to mind at the moment, though. I'd have to do a little bit more searching on that.
Yeah, because there's one team that I think you may be able to overreact to.
Actually, I just thought of one, but you can go ahead.
I was going to say Philly.
That was who I was going to say.
Nice. Because, I mean, just look at what they did this offseason. You know, you're coming off, basically, you Steelers. Yeah, this team was like the 2020 Steelers. You know, yep. Their in-state counterpart, where you start out hot, and then all of a sudden, you just collapse. The wheels come off. The entire team just dies in front of you. And just look at what they did. You signed Giants star Saquon Barkley. You got the eternally underrated edge rusher from the Jets and Bryce Huff, right? And what's this? Pro Bowl linebacker Devin White? That's pretty good, I dare say. He's on a one-year prove-it deal, but still. Also, you even upgraded at backup quarterback. You got Kenny Pickett over Marcus Mariota, who I believe they had.
Yeah, it was. They had
And here's a bit of a reunion. C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Yep. And you have a good or a decent depth piece with Devontae Parker. He was like a decent 50-50 ball guy.
Said yeah. No one ever. Get out of here with that. Get out of here with that, CJ.
Hey,
Devontae Parker is a good 50-50 ball. He can't even get separation.
Yeah, he can't.
Get a 50-50
he has ball. To be a good 50-50 ball guy because he can't get separation. But I will say one thing, though. I feel like Parker could do slightly better in a team where he's not the number one.
Yeah,
because he's going there and his ceiling is wide receiver three, so they're not going to devote as much attention to him. So do with that what you will.
Well, would you even consider Devontae Parker was even a wide receiver one with the Pats?
I don't even know who our wide receiver one even was.
The closest thing we really had to the Pats had to a wide receiver one was Kendrick Bourne, and he ended up tearing his ACL middle of the season. But Kendrick Bourne was basically the wide receiver one.
Yeah, no, but I mean, we kept trying to force feed Parker. You know what I mean? Like you could tell, like they extended him and they said, all right, we have to make it work. And that's why I basically even hinted that he was a one, because they literally kept force feeding him.
They had no other choice. I mean, they also had no other choice.
Yeah. I feel like he's like a good depth piece. You know what I mean? Like not like a starter guy, but you know,
yeah.
I mean, at least just on like name alone. So there's that
for sure.
But I'm just saying Philly, when you take that and couple it with the fact that the Dallas Cowboys approached this free agency with all the urgency of a child after a nap, well, I got to tell you, it's looking good for Philly.
Yeah, and we said this, week or two ago? I think it was when did we say it? It was... I forget when we said it, but we immediately said right after the Saquon got signed, it's going to end up, it doesn't matter, because it's going to end up coming down to how Philly coaches everything, because that's how, that's why their downfall happened last year, was because the coaches shit the bed. Mm-hmm. They basically stopped coaching. And
I know their roster had some real weak points. And once again, I know their coordinators weren't good, but you upgraded at safety. You upgraded at running back. Heck, I dare say you even upgraded at edge rusher. So there's just no excuse for them to implode. And I think if they implode again, where they should not, then we just have to admit that Sirianni is the problem.
And to say the least, most of Philly is already has Sirianni's head on a stake to begin with, too.
Yeah, fair.
That's a pretty fair statement to say.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of pressure in that Philly front office to get something done, especially in that coaching staff. Because, like I said, Sirianni's head is on a stake. He could be gone week five for all we know, because that's how insane that situation is over there.
Yeah, I do believe there is a very real chance, like you said, how Philly starts out. Just say it's like week five, and they're like 1-4 or 0-5, maybe even 2-3.
I was just about to say, even 2-3, you could see him gone.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's all I have for that, unless you have one more team that you can kind of think of. Here's one team that actually just came to mind. Would we consider the Baltimore Ravens kind of an overreaction? Yeah. Because they were able to get Derrick Henry, but now you're getting rid of OBJ, or most likely getting rid of OBJ. You're still going to keep Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman. You haven't really done a ton to really up the wide receiver position. Maybe you'd probably try to up it in the drafts, if anything, but they haven't. The only real move on the offensive side of the ball was to get Derrick Henry. But what happens when come playoff time, you decide to throw it 40 times again and only hand the ball off 10 times?
Well, they kind of figured that out, didn't they?
Yeah. And that's just a sad reality. That's a sad reality. They signed Derrick Henry. Congrats. But is that really going to matter in playoffs when you end up just shooting yourself in the foot, doing the same thing over and over again? That's the definition of insanity, by the way, folks. Doing something over and over and over again, expecting a different result.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's all the scheduled content that we have here, though, on the Fumbleroski podcast. Other news in the NFL world, J.J. McCarthy having his pro day going on earlier today. Cam Sutton getting released by the Lions, and also having he's out. He's got an arrest charge out for him. Not much else you can really say about that, but you got anything else to add, CJ?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, we thank you for listening to us, especially, like I said, big March Madness weekend. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern Standard. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Google Podcast, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram, Fumbleroski _podcast, and our TikTok, Fumbleroski Pod, to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, for myself, Chris Kostich, and CJ Medeiros, we will see you on Tuesday. Over and out.